Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Sensei.
Today's talk is referred to it as a mishmash.
It's improv.
Well, it sort of. I had a talk, and then all these other things, for whatever reason why I was writing the talk, popped into my head. So I'm going to start off with an experience that I had this morning, actually. And I think it's sort of a metaphor for our practice. I got up and I was still pretty groggy. Couldn't really see that haze in my eyes. And I was walking out of the bedroom into the hallway. And I see a lectern on the floor down the other end of the... And it's like I'm trying to make sense of what is... Who's there? I take a few more steps and my eyes are clearer. And I realize it's a cardboard box. And... that's sort of like how we relate to reality. My mind created a lectern. And when I saw clearly, I saw that I was just making that up. I was creating this reality, which I named a lectern. And I think that when we talk about Zen all the time, mind makes, that was sort of an experience of mind makes. And then how when we become clearer, we see the nature of that as... really empty. Lectern was empty. It was just something that I created in my mind. So that's number one. Number two, I don't even know if this is really going to make sense, but this came to me when I was doing my talk. And I realized how often we use the word just, not like justice or fairness, but the word just in our language, in our talking about our practice. So I looked in Oxford's dictionary, and just is defined as exactly, precisely. And it means nothing more. Nothing more is needed, right? Nothing extra, precisely. So then I was thinking, how many of you have been aware of the fact, while I'm sitting here with you, that you're breathing? Go through a large majority of our time breathing, but not being aware of it. Just breathing. And that just breathing can be disturbed by thinking, by our mind. You know, I might say, ooh, why is my breath so rapid? Or I could have a crazy thought like, what happens if I stop breathing? Maybe I'll die. So this creates, the mind creates this commotion. It's no longer just breathing. It's all these waves and disturbance that the mind creates. In Zen, we would say, just breathing, just breathing. And so in our sitting, just sitting. Nothing extra. And I was thinking, how about mindfulness meditation, which is very popular in recent times. And Thich Nhat Hanh was one of the contributors to this meditation becoming widespread. And Jon Kabat-Zinn, for example, began to use mindfulness in the realm of psychology in terms of stress, in terms of helping with anxiety, fear, emotional states. But at its heart, it's used to teach how to become fully present in each moment. So what they would say, or we would say, is when we wash the dishes, just wash the dishes. Nothing extra. You just wash the dishes. When we walk, we are just walking. Nothing else. Just walking. Anything else is extra. So when we sit and we still our mind, this just breathing, just walking, just doing the dishes becomes more clear. Now in our own practice, in the realm of Zen, one of the things that we're taught about sitting is to sit with no gaining idea. We don't sit for relief of suffering. We don't sit to achieve enlightenment. We don't sit for peace of mind. We don't sit so that we have a more conscious life. In Zen we say, just sit. Anything extra, all these thoughts or all these things that we would like to gain from practice are extra. Right? So when we sit here together, just sit. So in Zen we would say that when we entertain these wishes or desires or wants, then we're not truly sitting. And these thoughts and wishes interfere with our zazen. which I'm sure we've all experienced. So when we're taught, when we're sitting, we're taught to just sit, nothing extra. Now you know that in practice, a still mind and an open heart come together, just like gassho, putting two hands together. Right? Take one away, there's no gassho. Take the other one away, there's no gassho. They function together, inseparable. So wisdom occurs when the mind is still. And this wisdom is the realization of our true nature. And it's sometimes called enlightenment, kensho, insight, Christ consciousness. And when we realize wisdom, it happens when this checkerboard of all our mental constructs, thoughts, projections, the stories that we use to define reality, the stories that we use to come up with to define who we are or who we think we are, and they fall aside. And then we say the mind is empty. It's empty of all that activity. And all this activity, all this mental activity, takes this and makes this. We lose touch with the fact that we are wisdom and compassion together, and then we start thinking, and then there's wisdom, and then there's compassion, and before long it's like this. And we do this with everything. We create separation. Rumi, in one of his segment of one of his poems, said, "The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was." And then he says, "Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along." Now, I remember hearing this story. It's about, I don't know where it took place anymore, but it was about a young woman who, this is at a retreat, and she came to the teacher, and near the end of retreat, this had been sitting deeply, and she said to the teacher, "I see that things are just my story." And then later in the retreat, she came back to see the same teacher. And the teacher said, asked her, "How is it going?" And she said, "Now I see that everything is just my story." So when we let go of these stories, that's when we realize wisdom. Soon as the mind starts about what is just this and is it just that, okay, it goes from gassho to whatever we call this. So the actualization of wisdom, right? Wisdom in itself, just seeing clearly, is not enough. And I've talked about this a lot because it's something that's important to me. But the actualization of wisdom is compassion. It's that 10-foot pole in the koan. When you get to the top of the 10 or the 100-foot pole, what do you do? Now, one of the answers to that is you keep climbing, right? Your practice is never over. But another way to look at this is when you get to the 100-foot pole, when you are realized, when you have attained wisdom, you get off the pole. You come back down and you go into the world and you actualize that insight, that realization of the oneness of life. It's the experience of another person's suffering as our suffering. Right? Again, there's no separation. I whack this hand with a hammer. This hand over here doesn't say, "Well, boy, that's too bad. I feel bad for that hand." It's not like that. It's like this, right? The other hand immediately tends to the one that's been hit with a hammer because it's one body. It's not two things. So there's no helper, and there's no one being helped. And that's true helping. That's just helping. We don't create a story about, well, you know, if I take care of that person, I'll become a hero, and I'll, you know, all the stuff that gets created, or I don't know it. Oh my God, what am I going to do? I don't know if I can help with that. All right, that's all extra. When all of that is quiet, and it isn't always that way, of course, there's just helping, right? Just help. One hand taking care of the other hand. The left hand's pain is the right hand's pain. There's no separation. It's not your pain. If we are truly awake and we are truly actualizing compassion, it's just. Now, regarding this actualization of wisdom, I don't know, I came across this Anybody know who Gary Snyder is? I know you do. Well, Gary Snyder was, this is a very brief description of him, he's quite a guy, but he had gone to Japan and studied Zen Buddhism for a year and then came back, and he was a profound writer. He was a very accomplished writer and poet. This takes place during the Vietnam War, where there was a lot of political demonstration. And at the same time, there was this whole arrival of all the Eastern religions and practices. And one of the things that was taking place was all of these practices were coming, and people were becoming pacifists, but they were spending all their time sitting, getting enlightened. So it became a very non-active practice. And so it was something that was missing. It was Buddhism not being expressed in the daily life, particularly this incredible conflict that was taking place. So he wrote a piece that was called Buddhism and the Coming Revolution. And as I said, it was written during the time of heavy involvement in Vietnam, when a lot of people were committed to social action. And then he says, but it also came at a time when many people who had been activists were now beginning to practice Eastern religion and becoming pacifists. So they changed from being socially active to being spiritually active, but abandoning one for the other. In response to this transition that was taking place, he wrote, "Institutional Buddhism has been conspicuously ready to accept or to ignore the inequalities and tyrannies of whatever political system it found itself under. This can be the death of Buddhism, because it is a death to any meaningful function of compassion. Wisdom without compassion feels no pain." And then John Daido Luri, Roshi John Daido Luri, who's now dead, he said, "I don't care how many transmissions you have, or how many certificates you can pile up. If wisdom and compassion are not manifesting in your life, your realization is not real." Now, just to jump back to Gary Snyder, I forgot when I was talking about him. I just read an article talking about him, and he's 91, and he is still alive, and he lives somewhere out west, and I forgot the place, and a fair amount of time living alone. And it's in a non-rural place. There's not a lot around him. And so the interviewer was talking to him, and he was talking about his day. And so he talked about, in the evening, having dinner and ending his dinner with a Boilermaker, which I believe is a bottle of beer and a shot of whiskey. Is that? Mm-hmm. But anyway, just the word Boilermaker. And I could picture him. And it also talked a little bit about sometimes he likes to, after having a beer and a Boilermaker, go out and wander in the forest. And so that's going from a cardboard box to the word just to giving wisdom a meaningful activity. So thank you.